The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Team USA basketball lost to who? Also, we got your stories about that time your mama had to show up at your school. But first, all right, guys, we got lucky. The NBA Finals have turned out to at least be halfway competitive, or at least it looks like they're going to be competitive, or at the very least, the Bucks are not going to get swept, and that's all we need right now. Like, you do the math on all of this. We thought we were coming into these finals with no Giannis. Giannis was not going to be playing, at which point, honestly, what the hell are we doing here? Like, we could watch it just because it seems like, oh, it's the right thing to do. Who knows? Maybe it'll be some magical Cinderella moment type thing, but we knew damn well if the Bucks had Giannis out there, they weren't going to win. And we know that now even more with Giannis playing, because they were cheeks the first 2 games whenever he was out of it. Just useless. Just totally 100% useless. It was the wildest thing in the world. Anytime that he wound up going off the floor, they seemed to fall apart. But people were coming out of games somehow thinking that Giannis himself was the problem. And I have to tell you, I don't really get the math on that, guys. That dude put up 30 points in the second half against Phoenix in game 2. 30. Nobody else showed up. They lost. And I got people out here talking about Giannis and these damn free throws, right? Because the thing that happens for you when you're a player that's that good and you struggle with shooting free throws are the one thing that everybody in the world thinks they can do at an NBA level. Like, have you ever thought about this? Just stop and do the math on this. The NBA is the highest level of basketball. The average free throw percentage from year to year really doesn't change. Like, it was really locked in at about somewhere around like 69-70%. That's pretty much where it goes year after year after year. That's what the average free throw percentage in the NBA is. Every single one of you bums think that you could just go into an NBA arena in front of 15,000 people and you would make 7 out of 10 free throws. This happens. Like, you know, it's kind of like Daniel Dobbs is joining us. Gabe is out this week. You ever meet those people who swear up and down they run a 4.640?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of them, right? Like, people are so numb to the idea of what it is to run a 4.640. Because if you're a wide receiver and you run a 4.6, you're like, oh, well, he's not really that fast. So I love it when Rich Eisen does it. My man Michael Smith used to do it. Get out there and run the 40-yard dash. Just so you understand, you can't really do this, right? So the thing about free throws is, and this is the wildest thing, and tell me what you think about this. This is the thing about free throws. Even if you've shot free throws by yourself, like you sat around shooting 15-footers, you know, where it is that you are. Okay, cool. You've never done it in front of people in a way that matters, right? Like, even at your own high school team, I think I may have said this on the show before, but I'll say it again. It's 12 dudes on your high school team. How many people go to your high school? How many dudes go to your high school? So forth and so on. Okay, so you got 12 dudes on your high school team. 8 of them per year actually get minutes, and ain't that many of them playing late or whatever it is. How many of you actually have experience shooting free throws in front of people? And I know that some of you do, because there's always going to be one of you. Well, I do. Well, good for you, fool. Like, I'm not saying that nobody does. Obviously, I have watched people shoot free throws. Therefore, it's been done in front of people. I recognize that there are humans who actually do this. But the significant majority of you, the overwhelming majority of you, have never shot a free throw under conditions that are close to being a replication of what happens in the NBA. You've never done it. But you swear up and down that if all you did was just go practice free throws all the time, you would shoot 90%. From the free throw line. You're positive of this. And my question for you is, do you think these dudes don't do that? Like, you think these cats that are out here in front of the world being embarrassed, not making free throws, you think they don't try? You think they don't practice? You think they're just lazy? What are you talking about, right? Like, it is basically the equivalent of some of y'all, and I'm not throwing shade, I'm just making sure you understand what I'm saying here. Some of y'all's walk around weight is like 240. That's just what it is. Like, you could do all the workouts in the world, everything else, but you not getting below like 240 or whatever that number is that you can't get behind. And people out here looking at you like, yo, you just need to get out here and get in shape. And you be like, yo, man, I be out here trying. It just ain't happening. It's like me. I can lift all these weights. I can take all the protein shakes, whatever it is. I'm going to look about the same no matter what. It ain't because I'm not trying. This dude, Giannis, is out here trying. And what I have to say for him that's, you know, that's happened for me this postseason, I'm curious what you think about this, Daniel. I've come to really admire him this postseason for the way that he's handled the free throw stuff. Because he'd be up there looking bad.
Yeah.
And keeps on going.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing he can do, right? I mean, obviously, when he is the player and the caliber of a player that he is, and he struggles so badly from a position where everybody wants to say, like, I cannot believe you're hitting those. Like, the idea that he doesn't shoot, I don't know. How many free throws do you think he shoots a day in practice? I mean, he's got to shoot
it. Probably 100.
Yeah, right. At least 100 free throws every day. So you're saying that someone's doing something 100 times a day, I'm not doing it at all. And yet you're right. I'm absolutely in that. I have absolutely thought to myself, there's no way that I can't hit at least 60% or 70% from the line. Like, that's ridiculous. It's just insane. However, Giannis has absolutely just, I mean, everything that he did last night, he just carried that team. Being able to see him play, he's just so unbelievably good, man. And the idea that he has carried, even in spite of his struggles at the free throw line, man, I'm with you. I am proud of the way that he has carried himself through this finals.
Yeah, I got news for you. If I shoot an air ball on the first free throw, I'm not. You can have a second one, right? Like, no, I'm good. Let's just go down to the other end and just take care of this, right? Like, and it's interesting that it's happened in the postseason to Ben Simmons, right? Because I feel like, and I don't want to like throw the shade at Ben Simmons, but the way that Scottie Pippen, if he had one thing that he was right about, he was like, the difference between Ben Simmons and Giannis is Giannis doesn't care about being embarrassed. Like, he'll just come out there and keep doing it. And Ben Simmons, on every level, is terrified of being embarrassed. And he needs to get over that because, Daniel, I don't know how good an employee you are. Did you see the ESPYs thing that Anthony Mackie did on Ben Simmons?
I did.
Yo, I'm guessing Ben Simmons is back in Australia or somewhere else right now. But, like, if Ben Simmons was, you know, in Philly and I'm watching that on TV and it only take, you know, a short period of time to get up here, I'd have been waiting on that fool outside. Like, if you did not see this, they did a routine about Ben Simmons and his humanitarian work, and they showed a picture of a building being built and a stack of bricks and said, yes, he's building orphanages all over the world with his free throw bricks in the playoffs. And then they brought two small children on the stage and they're like, thanks, Ben Simmons. Oh, me and Anthony Mackie gonna have to talk about this. Like, and by talk, we not gonna talk, right? Like, we gonna have to have a conversation about this. But that's where I look at Giannis in the way that he's handled this postseason. Like, the free throws have been such a dominant theme. He's putting up all-time numbers. He has put up all-time numbers in the course of this series thus far. And Mike Budenholzer, we all get on Budenholzer for not adjusting, but he did seem to make an adjustment, which is Jrue Holiday is now hounding Chris Paul and had a great line after the game in the post-game interview. He's like, look, one of us is going to be tired, right? Like, I'm going to hound him because that's what I have to do. And I don't want to seem like a hater. Van Gundy got on there last night and was telling us about how Budenholzer has been slandered by people. Like, he said it's been slanderous to talk about his lack of coaching ability. But this is all I'm saying, and you guys tell me if I'm tripping. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, okay? If your adjustment was have my best defensive player guard Chris Paul, how was that an adjustment? How you didn't come up with that in the first place, right? Like, an adjustment is, damn, Jrue Holiday can't guard Chris Paul. I wonder what we got to come up with next. I can't imagine having a strategy of being like, you know what? I think we're going to have Jrue guard Chris. Yeah, this other stuff ain't working. How did you not come up with that in the first place? How did you not? You know? But this is good. I'm glad that this is enjoyable. I think I'm kind of rooting for Phoenix a little bit. Like, I don't have an investment in any of the teams that we have out here. I'm kind of rooting for Phoenix, though, because as a lot of players or people are talking about, like, it's getting harder for former players to get coaching jobs. And as people are going, you know, the analytics push and the Ivy League push in the front offices and all the venture capital cats and all those that are running things. And then the coaches that they then handpick. Phoenix took a player who basically had just retired, did a year or two as an assistant general manager, and now he's running things in James Jones, And then Monty Williams, who had a head coaching run that was good, not great, right? And then worked as an assistant in all this time and then came back around and got this job. Both doing just excellent jobs at this, you know? And as we're looking at the demographics of coaching and the dangers that the NBA is having to deal with, they are a walking refutation of the so-called revolution that is happening in the NBA. And if you want to give James Jones credit for anything, anything in the world, right? Because he didn't draft Devin Booker, for example, so we can't give him credit for that one. I don't think he was the guy who drafted DeAndre Ayton, because the owner was really the guy who drafted DeAndre Ayton. That's fine. But James Jones is the guy that drafted Cam Johnson. And I'm not saying that Cam Johnson is like the best player in the NBA. I'm not saying Cam Johnson is an all-star. I am saying, though, when they drafted Cam Johnson, all of us were like, yo, you took the oldest dude in the draft and you took him that high? Why in the world are you doing that? And then Cam Johnson went out there last night and did something to PJ Tucker that I did not know that Cam Johnson was capable of. Like, he got that at the top and decided the whole way, I'm dunking. And PJ Tucker's like, I have plenty of time to get here to, oh my God, now I'm getting dunked on. Then the Bucks decide, okay, we're going to challenge it. I don't know if the call was good. And all that was the referees being like, damn, run that back. Ooh, can I get another? I want to watch that. Ooh, can you show me that? Yeah, PJ, I understand why you were looking like what happened. I ain't know what happened neither. Surprised the hell out of me, if we want to be honest about this. Yeah, color me shocked. So yeah, we've got these NBA finals. We actually have a good game, a good set of games. We're going to see what happens at the end of this series. We're going to figure out if, you know, this is going to be game four, of course, is critical. It's not pivotal, but it is critical. If you know the Shannon Penn guide to series, this 2-1 game is critical. If it is tied, 2-2 becomes pivotal. If it is a 3-1 game, then we will see if the Bucks can stave off elimination, you know? And then if we get to 3-2, it becomes a do or die. No, that's not do or die. Game 7 is do or die. Game 6 is must win. Like, that's what that one comes down to. That one's the must win. So, hey, man, we in on all of these. Let's hope that that's good. And there will be a champion that is crowned, and people will be happy for that champion. But did you know that there is other basketball going on right now? Oh, hold on. And just so you know, I didn't know that more basketball had begun, but the United States Olympic team has begun playing games against other countries. I didn't know that this was what it was. I have a vague understanding of who was on Team USA this year. And I gotta tell you, this roster looks real 2004. And if you remember how 2004 went, right? Now, there is a difference, though, between this and 2004, which is 2004, if you actually go back and look at that roster, 2004 had some players on it. Like, Allen Iverson was on that team. Tim Duncan was on that team. It seemed like, because of the outcome and the way that the team wound up being thrown together, you kind of felt like, oh, maybe we didn't have that many good players. They had some really good players who were young. But you had Iverson, you had Tim Duncan, you had young Wade, young Melo, young LeBron. But they were arrogant. And you know they were arrogant because they put Emeka Okafor on that team. They were just like, yeah, we can get out here and we can send anybody out here. Lamar Odom was on that team. Amar'e Stoudemire was on that team. Again, the team had some good players, but it was kind of like haphazardly thrown together, right? A whole bunch of dudes are like, hey, I'm not going to play for this reason. I'm not going to play for that reason. You know, everything else. And then they went out there and they lost. And if you go back on it, it wasn't quite as embarrassing, the losses, as I think a lot of us would remember. The first loss to Puerto Rico, that was embarrassing because they lost by 19. But they lost to Lithuania by 4 points. They lost to Argentina by 8. And then they beat Lithuania in the bronze medal game the next time they played. Like, they weren't, it's kind of like when you go back and look at the 1988 team that made them go get pros. And they lost that last game by like 4 points or something like that. You know, kind of play like that. These dudes went out here and lost to Nigeria the other night. Now, granted, the Nigerian team does have a lot of NBA players on it, but one of them is Jahlil Okafor. You understand what I'm saying? Like, they're not giving us the best of the league necessarily out there on Team Nigeria. And Team Nigeria, coached by Mike Brown, by the way, went out there, and put it on them. Did you see that tweet that the Nigeria basketball team sent to Bam Adebayo?
Oh, I did not see it.
All right, so, you know, Adebayo's people are Nigerian, so he would be eligible to play for the Nigerian team if he so wanted, but he plays for Team USA, and they said of one, like, just looking at him, like, one of those memes with the kid looking at him like... They out here calling out traitors. They out here calling out the turncoats. They stuck it to Bam right there. Now, this is why I bring this up, because I don't really think it's a big deal. The team has been playing together for like a week. And I feel like if you go look at the roster of this Team USA for 2021, I think they had Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard starting. So we're talking about, what, two of the 10 best players in the NBA? Like Brad Beal, who I think is a bit overrated. Like, I think he's a bucket getter, but all he does is get you buckets. I don't think that Brad Beal is like a great player. I think he's a great, very good scorer, but a volume scorer, but I don't think he's a great player. This isn't the best roster we could send. It's not going to be a LeBron. It's not going to be a Steph. It's not going to be the guys. It ain't going to look like the All-Star game, which all with Olympic teams frequently look like, okay? But I never feel good about the way that we treat Team USA basketball just because there ain't no pride in it from fans. And what I mean by pride is this. If Team USA wins in basketball, nobody's waving no flags. Nobody's screaming USA, USA. Nobody's like thrilled about it. And you could make the argument that, yeah, it's because they're so good. We so good at gymnastics. We so good at swimming. We got a long list of sports that as the United States, we get out here and we dominate. And we still act like it's brand new every time we wind up winning it. Except for basketball. If they win it, they're supposed to. If they lose it, we shame them and we tear down the whole thing. Like, you think about it. Since the 1972 loss to the Soviet Union, which, you know, everybody roundly understands and feels like the U.S. got cheated in that one. They lost in 1988. They tore down the whole program. They brought in the pros and decided that would never happen again. They lost in 2004. They looked around and said, yo, we got to tear this thing down again and completely redo the way we run our system. By the way, at least in the second instance, they were correct. But I always think on the 1988 one, if they had sent out a team of college players for the 1992 Olympics, the U.S. would have walked, I say walked, to a gold medal. Because you know who the best player on that team would have been? Shaquille O'Neal. That's who. They'd have been out there with Shaq, Chris Webber, Penny Hardaway, Alonzo Mourning, Jimmy Jackson, Christian Laettner. We could keep going down the list. They'd have been out there with some stars. But, you know, the year before or the time before, they lost. And I'm going to pull this up right now just to make sure everybody understands just how much we overreacted here. That team lost one game to the Soviet Union. By how many points? Six. 6 points. It was a 6-point loss. Listen to some of these wins before that. They beat Spain by 44. They beat Canada by 6. Oh, that's a surprise. They beat Brazil by 15. They beat China by 51. They beat Egypt by 67. They beat Puerto Rico by 37. And they beat Australia in the bronze medal game by 29. They were out there destroying people. Lost one game, and now we got to go get Michael Jordan. Right? That's how we treat USA basketball. USA men's and women's basketball, relative to the rest of the world, the United States is better at basketball than any other sport. And we take no pride in it as a nation. None. We just treat these guys, what I would say, is kind of roundly, unfairly about it, because all they can do is win, and if they lose, then we're going to wind up being mad. And now, as this has gone year by year, and so much goes into Team USA and everything, I don't even feel like people watch the Olympic basketball games. Now, part of that is because NBC, understandably, okay, so just some like inside baseball TV stuff. The way I always refer to the Olympics is, the Olympics are It's sports for people who don't watch sports, right? Like, the audience for the Olympics is not sports fans. The audience for Olympic basketball is sports fans because it's all pros, right? Like, there is none of your typical Olympic starter from the bottom, now we hear type storylines that build that stuff up. Like, you're not going to find heartwarming stories in men's basketball because these guys are all zillionaires that are out here playing it. Like, you're not going to get that. You're not introducing people to somebody new. You're not going to get any of that stuff. So what NBC did was stop putting the men's basketball on the big network and start putting it on NBC Sports. My guess had been, one, to try to drive subscriptions to NBC Sports, but also the audience that is probably going to care the most about that is going to be the audience that would have NBC Sports or be inclined to watch NBC Sports. So I don't even know how much people like really get engaged in it. I don't really know how much people like really enjoy watching men's basketball until they lose. And then all of a sudden it's an occasion. Then everybody wants to discuss it. So I remember a few years ago, the discussion had been had about whether or not, or I think this is what the NBA wants and what FIBA really wants. So what they want to do, and Dan, I don't know if you heard about this, what they really want to do is they want to take what used to be called the World Championships and now is called the FIBA World Cup, mm-hmm. and make that where the best of the best play, right? Like, make that like the World Cup is for soccer. And then make the Olympics like the Olympics is for soccer. Because I think it's U24 or U22 or something like that for soccer. That's what they should do with basketball. Like, bring all, this is where the kids should be playing, is in the Olympics. If you sent out a team out there with Zion Williamson and like Trae Young, you know, all these guys that are way young, I think that we'd be into it then. I think that you could find a way to get people there. I think you'd also probably wind up with like a high school player or two that makes the team and then, you know, starts getting introduced. That's probably the best way to do it. And then hopefully, man, we can get some, I almost call it a school spirit, but this ain't a school, but you know what I mean? Like, hopefully we can get some enthusiasm around this, because it's just, Americans love to dominate something and we have a dominant program and people just don't care. They just don't seem to feel any investment in it. Again, with players that they're heard of, players that they're familiar with, you know? So maybe that's the way to put the juice back in it. I don't have a great answer for that, but I'm just bracing myself in knowing that if something happens in this team, that look, the NBA season just ended. It's not like they've had like all these camps and things to get ready and to have the continuity that a lot of these teams in other countries have. Like, they're going uphill in a lot of ways in this. But I just hope that if they do lose, we don't fall into our worst impulses, as is typically the case in these times, and we just bash the team. These dudes out here playing for free. Like, I can't believe Kevin Durant's out here playing right now. After, you know, after that long season with the Achilles and all this, he's out here. I can't believe that. Like, dudes are making a level of sacrifice to compete for USA basketball that they don't have to make. The least we could do is act like we appreciate it just a little bit, right?
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this story comes from science. Oops, nope, I lied. This story comes from finance.
Hey, Bo Money. I'm Greg Rosalski from NPR's Planet Money podcast, and I recently wrote a story for our newsletter about shrinkflation. So you've probably heard about inflation. That's when the price of stuff goes up. Shrinkflation is when the size of stuff goes down. Here's an example. General Mills cereal. Recently, General Mills shrank the amount of cereal in their family size boxes from 19.3 ounces to 18.1 ounces. That means less Cheerios, less Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Meanwhile, selling those boxes of cereal for the same price. It's classic shrinkflation. I spoke with this consumer advocate, Edgar Dworsky, who has been finding evidence of shrinkflation for years. We're talking smaller bags of Doritos, smaller bars of soap, smaller bottles of ranch dressing, smaller bottles of Powerade. Dworsky says that shrinkflation tends to come in waves, typically around the same time we see inflation. In other words, like now. When businesses face higher production costs, you know, higher gas prices, higher prices for raw materials, and so on, they have a couple options. They can raise the price of their products, you know, inflation, or they can keep the price the same and shrink the size of their products. Studies suggest that consumers are much less likely to notice when the size of a product shrinks than when the price of that product goes up. So, companies find shrinkflation to be, you know, an attractive business proposition in times like this. So everyone out there, pay attention. You may be getting charged the same or even more for less.
Yo, that is the incredible okie doke right there. Just take a little bit off. Just a little bit. Nobody's going to notice. And they're right. Nobody's going to notice. A little ounce there. A couple drops here. A little bit here. A little bit there. Nobody's going to see it. Nobody's going to figure it out. And they getting us. They getting us. Like, we are slowly watching our entire economy, like, kind of fall apart. Even if they tell you on the news the economy all good, you know what I'm saying? Even if they tell you that everything is rolling, the stock market's up and everything else, it's those little things that you look at here and there. You start looking around in these places that can't get anybody to come work because they don't want to pay enough money, you know? Like, they don't want to get people there. The way all this stuff goes, Daniel, have you tried to order any furniture recently?
Order furniture? Bo, what kind of stratosphere do you think I live in? I still put mine together from IKEA.
I'm just saying this, though. You can call IKEA. That don't mean they got it. Like, the supply chain is so messed up. Like, I just moved. So I'm, you know, trying to get a couple things done, see some thing, whatever it is, right? The supply chain is so busted that people wait months to get stuff. Hearing that they're going to get some on this day, and then, nope, it's going to be this. Nope, it's going to be that. Nope, it's going to be this. Everything else. We stuck, man. Like, everything just seems to be going, and so these companies are trying to figure out how to keep these margins and how to keep these share prices high, and they're going to run every little game that they can. So, yeah, the box of cereal that used to be called 55 ounces now might be 52 ounces, but all you know is that it's a box. It's a box. It's got a bag in it. You don't think about this in terms of, like, you know, how many ounces or how many flakes or how many bowls or whatever it is. That's not what it is. And so as every little thing that we've got is getting a little trickier, people don't want to work. I'm just telling you, man, it's a matter of time before we get out here scrapping it out in these streets. And I want to be clear. I just said people don't want to work. It's not that people don't want to work. People don't want to work for these prices that they out here trying to get people to come in here and work for. They just don't. And so every little bit, every time we look around, I'm just like, yo, we blew it, man. Somebody made a great observation to me about COVID very early on, and it's proven to be true. And he said, everything that's going to happen in the subsequent weeks and months are things that were already going to happen, but COVID is accelerating everything. Like, COVID is pushing up. So one place where this is getting interesting in these streets is with Uber. So Uber's plan always was, we're going to keep giving out these cheap fares basically until we put taxis out of business. Now, in a lot of places, taxis, like, I mean, I live in New York. Taxis are a thing here. Like, there are places where taxis are a thing. But, you know, I'd say most of America, taxis are not really a thing. Look here. Miss COVID has put so many cab companies out of business. People didn't need rides. People needed, you know, they just happened. So many of the other cab companies went out of business, and Uber has jacked those prices up so high. I had two different times that a four-mile ride, it was a four? Yeah, it's about four. Two different times, a four-mile ride, they tried to charge me $85. $85 for this. Because everything's just out of whack. Every single bit of it. And worst come to worst, they gonna get their money. Bet that.
All right, Bo, this next story comes from Science.
Hi, this is Rachel Feltman. I'm the executive editor at Popular Science Magazine and the host of our podcast, The Weirdest Thing I Learned This Week. So there were these videos going around Twitter showing what looked like an eye of fire in the middle of the ocean in the Gulf of Mexico, just west of Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. And it looked like something out of some kind of horrible fantasy film, but it was very real. What happened is that there was a leak of a gas pipeline owned by Mexico's state-owned oil company, Pemex. According to Pemex, this fire took 5 hours to put out, and the company is saying that there was no environmental damage. However, experts say it's far too soon to make a claim like that, and that Pemex will have to investigate to see whether local wildlife was affected by this 5-hour blaze. For now, Pemex is saying that there was a lightning storm that may have damaged one of the oil pipelines, or perhaps that was just damage that had accrued over the oil pipeline's lifetime, and that then a lightning bolt set some of that loose oil on fire. According to reports by Bloomberg, this cluster of oil fields produces around 40% of Pemex's oil, but its output has declined each year for more than a decade. And at the end of 2020, the company as a whole was more than $113 billion in debt, which of course brings into question whether these oil rigs and pipelines should have been replaced or repaired sooner and were not due to financial considerations. Environmental researchers say that these kinds of leaks and fires on the ocean are something we should be increasingly aware of and cautious about as oil platforms age throughout the world.
Yeah, so let's say this one more time for the people in the cheap seats. The Gulf of Mexico was on fire. The water was on fire. And I ain't gonna lie, my thought was, see, Cleveland is not just y'all. Like, there's always this famous story about that time that the lake in Cleveland caught on fire and people use that to pick on y'all all the time and y'all get tired of that, you know, understandably, because y'all always feel like we always picking on y'all, and the truth is, yes, we are. But yes, somebody else's water caught on fire. It's not just you guys. Now let's get back to the Gulf of Mexico caught on fire. We've been doing this show for a long time here, and me and Gabe have done some stories that I don't know if I want to call them doom and gloom necessarily, but we let y'all know what's going on. And I feel like this show makes me and myself personally just kind of afraid of the future and what is happening, right?
Yeah.
The Gulf of Mexico caught on fire. And we just looking at the pictures. And you know what the wildest thing was about the Gulf of Mexico catching on fire? It was just another story that day, man. Like, that's all it was. It was like, wow, look at that. The Gulf of Mexico is caught on fire. I wonder what else is going on in the world. Because that's just, like, everything. Did you see the subway flood the other day in New York City?
Oh my gosh, it was ridiculous. Watching people try to walk down the stairs with like trash bags around their like jeans, yes, like that's somehow going to help them. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yo, but let me tell you about that day. So that was one of the days that I tried to catch an Uber and it cost $85. Right? And I looked at it, it was storming and they tried to hit me for the $85 and I need to get back home. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. And so the rain is slow. So I was like, fine, I'm going to just go to the subway. And so I went to the subway at Times Square. I got on, I got off at my house. And then everything went crazy. But there was that famous video of that woman at 157th Street who went down and then just said, bump it, and just jumped in the water, you know, surrounded by, and everybody's like, it'll never be that bad for me. It'll never be that bad. Fast forward a couple days, I saw a video of that stop, like at 157th Street outside. Wow. And the street looked exactly the same. Like, I just loved how people were like, you think this woman, you think anybody just looked at that water and was like, well, I guess no other, you know, I guess I got no other choice. No, no, no. This woman had done the math on this. She had tried to figure it out and was like, I got to get home. And the only way for me to do it is through this. This is where we are. And let me tell you, when stuff like that happens, you kind of forget that the Gulf of Mexico just caught on fire a little while ago.
But, Bo, you do have to remember that the officials are certain there was no environmental damage from the five-hour oil fire that they had in the Gulf of Mexico. So that's at least really, you know, good for us.
You seem skeptical.
Just a little bit.
They'll tell us anything, man. They'll get out here and try to tell us anything. No, 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 there was no environmental damage. Okay, well, you know, since you said it, I guess it's... you wouldn't lie to me, would you?
All right, Bo, this next story comes from Keeping the Man Down.
My name is Dr. Ifeanyi Nsọfọ. On the 30th of June, 2021, I published a piece on NPR titled, I am Nigerian, I am vaccinated, Europe won't let me in. On the 21st of March, 2021, I received my first dose of the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. 2 months later, on the 25th of May, 2021, I received my second dose of the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. I became fully vaccinated. I am fully vaccinated. I felt I could take on the world. Me, my wife, and two daughters started planning our holiday destination for the year. We were considering one of the Schengen countries in the EU as our destination. Therefore, it was a rude awakening for me to find out that the EU was launching a COVID-19 green pass that would bar people like myself from entering the EU. The question is why? The answer is because the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine that I took is manufactured in India by the Serum Institute of India, the world's largest manufacturer of vaccines. However, the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine produced within the EU or the UK is good for the EU. And I started wondering, why would the same vaccine produced using the same recipe from the same pharmaceutical firm be accorded different respect? And for me, this now reminded me again that this is another example of COVID-19 vaccine inequity that people like myself from Africa, from Asia, and Latin America have been facing. You can understand why I wrote the piece. I am pained, I'm tired, I'm weary, I'm disappointed that yet again I'm facing another COVID-19 vaccine inequity. I urge the EU to rescind this green pass and ensure that everybody who is fully vaccinated with the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine is accorded the same respect. Doesn't matter where the vaccine was produced, period.
Yo, so first of all, the idea that right now, 2% of people in Africa, the whole damn thing, 2% of them are vaccinated at this point. While we have this collection of morons in this country just letting vaccines go to waste after all the fight to get all this, you dummies somehow think that y'all don't need it or it don't matter, X, Y, and Z. Right? Come on. Get out of here. But this, in this case, the idea that he's got the same vaccine as the AstraZeneca one that they're using in Europe, it just happened to be manufactured in India. And that's the reason that they're not going to let him or anybody else get into Europe. Obviously, just seemed like y'all don't want them in Europe, right? Like that just seems to be what the case is. Y'all just don't want these Africans to come to Europe. Okay, like if that's the game you playing, obviously I don't think that's cool. But for now, I'm not even getting into that. I'm going to tell you the part that I'm getting into right now, which is we all have some knowledge of history. The irony that Europeans are worried that the brown people will show up and give them a crippling disease. Guys, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but they probably need to be a lot more afraid of you than vice versa. We done seen your movies. You got a legacy of showing up in these places and then the people get sick. Hey, you guys want a blanket? Happy Thanksgiving, right? Like we got all kinds of stories that fall in line with this, but y'all afraid that they gonna be the ones to make you sick. So I'm serious, man. Here's what Joe Biden need to do. And I tell you this, if Joe Biden do this, I bet you a whole lot of people gonna mess around and start getting that vaccine pretty quick. If Joe Biden get out here and say, fine, y'all don't want this vaccine, I'm sending them all to Africa. You would be amazed all of a sudden how many people are like, hey, wait a minute. Because the one thing don't nobody like is the idea of black people getting nothing for free. It really, really drives people crazy. Like I gotta say, if they start finding out we breathing for free, that air gonna have a price. That's just the name of the game. That's just the way it goes. Tell me, we can't let this man in there just because your vaccine was made in India, which also tells me that you saying you don't want the Indians up in there either. You're just trying to keep everybody out. And I got to be honest, with the way that the cooties is getting around the UK, I wouldn't want to go there if I was them. Y'all need to be glad somebody want to come into your little disease-infested island. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo, what kind of voicemails are we going to be taking today?
All right. I don't even know where Gabe came up with this, because normally it's motivated by something in the news. But Gabe was like, what about that time your mom had to come to school? And I really hadn't thought of Gabe as being the kid whose mom had to come to school. But who knows? Maybe he was a bit of a miscreant when he was younger. So that's what we got, man. Those stories about the time your mom had to show up at the school.
All right. This one's from Calvin in Baltimore.
I was failing French so bad that the French teacher called my mother, and she came up to school. And you know how dudes are. I had barely been to school in the morning because my French class was in the morning, so I was just cutting the class. So when I come up, they're all like, yo, Cal, where you been? And I'm all like, Joe, shut. My mother was walking right behind me, and they all like, yo, that's your mother, yo. Oh, you in trouble. You know how they do. So we get up to the French class, and my mother was like, yeah, I just wanted to see, you know, what was going on with my son and how his grades were going. Man, my French teacher looked at my mother and said, I haven't seen Calvin in 2 months. Well, needless to say, when I got home, I got beat in all kinds of different languages.
I have not seen Calvin in months. Oh, that'll do it. Rut roll. See, cutting school was never an option for me because I lived out of the district, and so my mama had to take me to school in order for me to get there. And ain't none of my friends have no cars or nothing to do, right? Like, maybe I could get her to drop me off and I jump in somebody else's car. I said, ain't nobody had no car. We was just going to school.
What are you going to do when your parents find out that you just stopped going to school for 2 months? Like, does the long game ever not, like, catch up with, like, oh, I'll just, future Daniel will deal with that.
Yeah, you know? No, that's high schoolers, right? Because yeah. The thing about it, in college, you can get away with that. You just show up for the test, right?
That's true.
Like it's funny. I never ever hear anybody talk about that in high school. They'd be like, yo, I just cut school for 45 straight days. Like, you ain't even just show up for the test. Like, you can get by if you do that.
All right, this one comes from Tim in New Orleans.
1991. I'm in the eighth grade. I think I'm a class clown. I think I'm the funniest MF-er. Until the day I had to bring home a note for mama. And my mama, who is usually quick to the belt, didn't do anything this time. So I'm sitting there like, oh, okay. Fast forward to the next day. I go to school like nothing's normal. Who do I see when I get into the homeroom? Mama is sitting right there waiting for me at my desk. And when I tell you, mama spent the whole day at school with me. I'm talking every class, lunch, sat with my friends at lunch, and made damn sure anytime a question came to me, which, you know, funny that day, every question came to me, that my hand was up, ready to answer. Finished the year. Be average. Never had that issue again.
Dog, your mom spent the whole day at school with you? I didn't even know that was an option. Right? Like, I didn't know the school would allow such a thing. You know, like, y'all just try to hang out at school. You good with that? I didn't know. I had no idea that the school would do that. That they would just be like, sure, have a seat. You're welcome to observe the whole thing.
How about all day long? Good on his mom, though. Be average at the end of the school year. I mean, he obviously, like, it was the right decision.
Yes. She had that was a great strategy from her. Like, oh, I know what'll get him to go back to school. Uh-huh.
Yep.
And there it was.
All right, this last one is from somebody who obviously didn't leave their name because they've never listened to the show before.
Yo, Bo. My mom only had to come up to the school one time, and it wasn't for me. In about third grade or so, got into a little ruckus, but not even really a ruckus. Someone stole a pencil or some inconsequential thing, and a kid decided to try and wail on me or whatever. The teacher intervened before I could do anything and ripped my shirt up. I came home, my shirt was ripped. Mom asked, what happened? I said, oh, so-and-so, you know, ripped it when they were trying to fight. She's like, oh, did you fight back? It's like, I tried, but the teacher intervened and said, that's not what we do. We don't hit people, et cetera, et cetera. She said, okay. Thought that was the end of it. Next morning, I think I'm about to just walk to school. She says, no, I'm coming today. We go to school. We get in there. She's like, okay, who did it? So I point out the boy. And then she's like, okay, cool. Teacher, can I talk to you for a minute? Put the teacher in the hallway. I was in the hallway. And she said, if somebody put hands on my son could put hands on them. I worked hard. I bought those clothes. They ripped them up. They ain't going to pay me back. The next time you intervene, I'm going to have to put hands on you. And I had no problems the rest of the school year. So that was the time my mom came up to school. Peace.
So what I'm gleaning from this is your mother does not believe that the teacher intervened. Your mother believed that you let them rip your clothes and that you ain't do nothing about it. And so she had to be the one to come do something about it. Because you could have just gone up there and fought the dudes the next day and told her what happened. Nope, 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 nope. She decided she was going to handle that. She realized you ain't quite had that in you. And that's fine. Not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but I got to be honest with you. At my school, that wouldn't have made nothing easier. Nothing at all. Because, yeah, your mama going to come up and fight them. Well, somebody else's mama going to come up here. Now it's going to be the mama battle royale. Hey, man, that's a good run. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Daniel Dobb handling everything behind the scenes this week. Thank you, sir. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.